children are entitled to a relationship with both of their parents, and they're entitled to know who they are.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse of the Ruth Institute talking about her presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And if you take that entitlement as basic and reason backwards from that, what you'll end up with is the whole traditional Christian sexual morality. Get married, stay married, and only have sex with the person you're married to.
You can meet and hear Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse making the case against the sexual revolution at the Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120 and includes three meals. Child care is free. For more information, look for the Making the Case logo at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
The Bible gives President Trump the moral authority to use whatever force necessary, including assassination or even war, to take out an evildoer like Kim Jong-un.
The Democratic Party has been led astray by the abortion rights movement that thinks that this abortion messaging is a winning strategy. It simply isn't a winning strategy outside California and New York.
The Reformation is the crystallization in God's providence of the gospel and of the authority of God's word. And it is a reminder to us that it's exactly what we need today.
This is Flo from Idaho. Locked and loaded Lutheran ladies love listening to the straight shooters at Issues Etc.
Well, when a story involves a multi-billion dollar multinational company, that it's not even fair to call Google multinational. It's by definition something that goes beyond just a company. It is most people's homepage. It's most people's search engine. It's the largest advertising organization in human history and very successful at it as well. When a story involves Google and then add in differences between men and women, which used to be kind of something people learned, I don't know, in preschool and have for some reason recently forgotten that there are differences between men and women, psychological, emotional, as well as obviously biological. It's got to go someplace. It's got to have a crazy angle and a crazy end. And this one does. Google fires an employee because he happens to notice that men and women are different and that Google seems a little, well, seems a little lopsided in how it hires men and women. He tried to find a charitable explanation for it, but Google didn't take it that way and he lost his job. Welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live on this Friday afternoon, August the 11th, from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to spend some time with Pastor Hans Feeney. He's written recently for The Federalist on the outrage addiction that so many of us suffer from and the firing of a Google employee over a diversity memo. Then we're going to talk with Joy Pullman of The Federalist about a recent comment made by tennis superstar Serena Williams about pregnancy and womanhood, and, you know, she's pretty much right, but you wouldn't know it from her critics and social media. She's betrayed the cause. G. Shane Morris will join us. Senior writer for Breakpoint will talk about a recent episode of his Disney Channel cartoon featuring a lesbian couple. And then Dr. Larry Rask. There's a story in the Wall Street Journal about the closing of mainline Protestant seminaries. We're going to get his thoughts on that. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, since it's Friday, the end of the broadcast week. We are back live on this week, and we've got audio lined up in the form of sound bites to play for you. We'll play soundbite of the week. We'll play our four sound bites. Then you give us a call and vote for one of them to be soundbite of the week, 1-877-623-6943. Or you can send us your vote via email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter at issuesetc, or vote at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. And your votes will decide which will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Joining us to talk about outrage addiction and the firing of a Google employee over a diversity memo, Pastor Hans Feeney, a regular guest, pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled "Google Firing Over Diversity Memo Shows How Outrage Addiction is Making Us Stupid." Hans, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
You say that this employee of Google was fired not for what he said, but for what the media said he said. What do you mean?
Well, when Google's CEO addressed the controversy, he had this quote where he said, "To suggest a group of our colleagues have traits that make them less biologically suited to that work is offensive and not okay." And this is sort of the justification for firing the guy who wrote this note. Well, the problem is that the guy never actually said that women have traits that make them less biologically suited to positions in leadership and in tech. Rather, his overall point was that part of the reason that could explain why it is that there's not an equal share of men and women in leadership and tech positions at Google is that just due to biological factors, women tend to be less interested in positions that are high stress and that are kind of solitary, that are sort of isolated from other people. You know, and those positions basically are leadership positions and tech positions where you're off kind of by yourself writing a lot of code. And it's kind of one of the main things he talks about is, in one of the ways he actually suggest to improve that is to have tech positions that are where there's more collaborative work, which is a thing that women tend to be more interested in than men by and large. So he said these are just kind of the general trends based off of kind of the biological differences between men and women. But he never remotely said that women are incapable of carrying out this work. It was just that all women are incapable of carrying out this work. It was just simply saying that women on average tend to be less interested in this stuff. And obviously the difference between women can't do this, or there are difference between all women can't do this and most women generally don't want to, is a huge difference that shouldn't have been so hard for people to recognize. But that's not actually what he said, or rather what he was fired for was not really what he said. It was ultimately what the media essentially accused him of saying.
So he was actually trying to offer a helpful suggestion as to how Google could increase the proportion of women in leadership in tech, and just saying, look, let's let our techs work together a little bit more, and then maybe women would be more interested in taking those jobs.
Right, yeah, that's precisely what he was doing, which is sort of the odd thing, is that a lot of the media coverage was describing his memo. First of all, they would describe it as a manifesto, which is really silly if you read it, because you can tell it's written by an engineer. It's very kind of technical and straightforward. It doesn't have sort of the hallmarks of typical, you know, incendiary type writings. But on top of that, yeah, he basically, sort of the odd thing is that the memo is described as being anti-diversity, which it's not at all. He offers, I think, 10 bullet points in his memo on how they could sort of address the diversity problem. But his whole point was just simply, all right, well, look, if we want to have more women in these positions, you know, Google has sort of an ideological bias. It has sort of a leftist ideological bias, which is preventing people in the company from considering all the possible causes for this imbalance of men and women in the workforce. And so basically here's another perspective that's maybe not being considered. And so here would be some ways to therefore address that problem that are born from another perspective.
Okay. Then we enter with Pastor Feeney's diagnosis of outrage addiction. What is it?
Yeah, outrage addiction, or really just anger addiction, I suppose you could call it, is essentially a real thing. So anger, there's a difference between substance addictions and process addictions. So a process addiction is a behavior that people go through, so rather than something they're injecting into their body. So, for example, gambling can become an addiction for people. Sex addiction can become a thing for people. And there's certainly plenty of evidence that outrage or anger can become an addiction as well, which is basically all that happens is pretty simple. It's just that when you lash out in anger towards someone, it causes your brain to get a release of dopamine, which yields a sense of euphoria, makes you feel good. And in the same way with kind of other forms of addiction, when you don't have healthy ways of releasing dopamine, when you don't have healthy ways of getting that sense of euphoria, you will return to the sort of self-destructive ways of getting it. And so in the same way that, you know, that people end up injecting all sorts of harmful chemicals into their bodies in order to get that sense of euphoria, people who sort of overindulge in outrage can very easily end up becoming hooked on the behavior, where it's something that they feel that they need to do in order to actually deal with pain and to feel better.
How does that play into this story about Google and firing an employee who is just trying to help?
Well, I think one of the things that social media has done is it's really exacerbated this problem of outrage addiction. And so sort of what happens is that Twitter is probably the best example of this, so is that people will log on to Twitter, and instead of using it as a source to kind of get news and read over articles and learn things about the world, instead, a lot of times what will happen is people just, they follow various accounts of people who kind of share their political biases. And they'll wake up and they get on the phone in the morning and the smartphone, and they see that these people they follow are screaming about some terror, what I call in the article today's sinner. So it's, you know, the person who's done something that shows them to be a woman hater or a minority hater or a cop hater or an animal hater or whatever it is. And then people just start lashing out at this person who's very often a person that they've never even met or never even heard of before. And what they're doing is they're trying to get that kind of release of dopamine, trying to make themselves feel better. So basically this becomes a form of addiction for people, where it's a set of behaviors that they go through to engage in this kind of, to get that release of dopamine. And what I talk about in the article, in particular when I talk about how all of this is making us stupider, what happens is that so when people are going online to social media, they're not trying to get informed. They're trying to get high on anger. And so because they want to get high, they won't do the things that otherwise intelligent people would do when they encounter this information. So something I've certainly experienced when I've written stuff that people get angry about is that in a huge percentage of cases, people aren't even reading the article. They just see the title of the article. They see what someone, they see the sort of the anger that someone else has vomited out against it, and then they kind of jump on the bandwagon. They sort of want to get in on the fury party. So, not reading the article obviously makes us all stupider. If we are unwilling to actually to even learn and to even educate ourselves as to what actually happened, then that of course makes us dumber. But we don't do it because if you just want to get mad, well, then, you know, actually learning what the person did and reading the actual firsthand account of things, well, you might discover some element that might actually make things a little bit different, and you might have to take your outrage level down once you know the real story. It's a little bit like when, you know, when people have just made up their minds that they hate someone and they won't listen to his or her side of the story. And the reason they don't is because, well, they're not interested in fairness. They just want to hate that person. And so they're not going to sit down and talk with that person. They're not going to give him a chance to explain himself because they don't, that's not what they want. They don't want fairness. They don't want to make sure that they understand the issue. They don't want truth. They just want the adrenaline rush and the dopamine hit that comes from being angry. Kind of likewise, on top of that, the other thing that people do is they just kind of take a cheese grater to their brains and prevent themselves from being able to understand pretty simple distinctions. Kind of going back to this case with Google, there's a huge distinction between saying, on average, most women don't want to do this work, and saying all the women are biologically incapable of doing this work. Those are not remotely the same statement, and anyone with a modicum of intelligence should be able to tell you the difference between those two. But those were the words that were just simply being shoved into this guy's mouth, because you could actually get mad at, you couldn't get as mad at him for saying what he actually said, but you could get mad at him for saying what it is that you claimed he said. In the article, I put this kind of in the form of what I call an idiotic syllogism, or the idiot syllogism, which is, I am mad at people who say X, I am mad at you, therefore you said X. And that's just kind of the point with this, is that people don't want to be accurate, they just want to be mad. So they will attribute to you the things that they can get angriest about.
So this isn't just people being angry or reacting in an angry way. This is people looking for an opportunity to be angry.
Right. Yeah, exactly. If you're responding in anger to an article that you haven't read, it's not about the truth. It's not about justice. It's not about fairness or anything of that nature. It's about you looking to get high off of anger. If you are attributing to someone an argument that is not even remotely on the same page as what the guy actually said. You're not actually interested in whatever supposed injustice you think is in the air. You just want to get angry. You've set out your mind that you're going to be angry, and then you just simply put the words in someone else's mouth. You find the easiest target to put those words into someone's mouth, and you do what it is that you'd set out to do from the very beginning.
From a pastoral perspective, how do you deal with the fact that, well, anger, I can't say it makes us happy. It makes us feel good at some level, but we're pretty strongly warned against frivolous and unrighteous anger.
Yeah, this is a delicate line to walk, because on the one hand, we do have to recognize that there is such a thing as righteous anger. I mean, so you know, we see that obviously in the cleansing of the temple. You know, we see countless biblical admonitions for how it is that we should be zealous for the truth and how we should oppose with all of our might false doctrine. You know, and evil living. But of course, the problem is our hearts are so corrupt that it's very easy for us to very quickly convince ourselves, well, the kind of anger I'm dealing with is righteous anger and not destructive anger. As St. James says that we ought to be, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. He doesn't tell us so much not to get angry, but just simply to be slow to anger. So in other words, I think you can look at that verse and say the whole point of it is, you know, give that person a chance to explain what happened. Make sure you know what's actually taken place. And kind of from that, then take the right approach. And so ultimately, and then obviously the verse ends, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. So even if there are times when there needs to be a sense of righteous anger, whether that's with regards to you need to defend an injustice or protect people who are in harm's way or whatever it is, the main point of that is that you can't hate people into the arms of God. So you can't hate yourself into the arms of God. You can't make yourself holy by hating your neighbor, and you can't make your neighbor holy by hating him. That's ultimately only accomplished through faith in the blood of Christ, so that when we believe that Christ has won salvation for us, through faith we receive the righteousness that he won for us at Calvary, and the same thing goes for our neighbor. So our ultimate goal in any issue that's sort of dealing with anger shouldn't just be anger for anger's sake, but ultimately it should be seeking the righteousness of Christ, both for ourselves and for our neighbor.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, senior contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Google Firing Over Diversity Memo Shows How Outrage Addiction is Making Us Stupid. You'll find a link to it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, Joy Pullman's going to join us. She has recently written about Serena Williams. Serena Williams just sent out a little memo on social media talking about being a real woman now that she's going to have a child. And we're happy that she's going to have a child. A lot of people are not happy at what she said. We'll go over that with Joy Pullman after this.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. Mark Lutheran, Edmond, Oklahoma. Emmanuel Lutheran, Manchester, New Hampshire. University Lutheran Chapel, Minneapolis, Minnesota. Prince of Peace Lutheran, Freedom, Pennsylvania. Holy Cross Lutheran, O'Fallon, Missouri. St. Paul Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana. Christ Lutheran, Rochester, Minnesota. Holy Cross Lutheran, Carlisle, Iowa. St. Peter's Lutheran, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Grace Lutheran, Wellsville, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
¿Por qué hay cuatro evangelios? ¿Qué pasa con los bebés que mueren antes de nacer? ¿Qué significa temer a Dios? Respuestas bíblicas a preguntas difíciles se encuentran en la edición de agosto de The Lutheran Witness, una revista de la Iglesia Luterana, Sínodo de Missouri. Visite a cph.org/trylutheranwitness para una oferta especial. 6 ediciones para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in 2 different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. For your homeschooler or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.